The flight, they were locked to the racks. Bombs were locked and unlocked remotely on the B-47, using a small lever in the cockpit. The lever was attached by a lanyard to the locking pin on the bomb. As the B-47 above South Carolina climbed to an altitude of about 15,000 feet, a light on the instrument panel said that the pin hadn't re-engaged. The lever didn't seem to be working. The pilot told the navigator, Captain Bruce Kulka, to enter the bomb bay and insert the locking pin by hand. Kulka couldn't have been thrilled with the idea. The bomb bay wasn't pressurized. The door leading to it was too small for him to enter wearing a parachute, and he didn't know where the locking pin was located, let alone how to reinsert it. Kulka spent about 10 minutes in the bomb bay looking for the pin without success. It must be somewhere above the bomb, he thought. The Mark VI was a large weapon, about 11 feet long and 5 feet in diameter, and as Kulka tried to peek above it, he inadvertently grabbed the manual bomb release for support. The Mark VI suddenly dropped onto the bomb bay doors, and Kulka fell on top of it. A moment later, the 8,000-pound bomb broke through the doors. Kulka slid off it, got hold of something in the open bomb bay, and held on tight. Amid the gust and roar of the wind, about 3 miles above the small farms and cotton fields of Mars Bluff, he managed to pull himself back into the plane. Neither the pilot nor the co-pilot realized the bomb was gone until it hit the ground and exploded. The accident at Mars Bluff was impossible to hide from the press. Although Walter Gregg and his family had no idea what destroyed their home, the pilot of the B-47, unable to communicate with Hunter Air Force Base, told controllers at a nearby civilian airport that the plane had just lost a device. News of the explosion quickly spread. The state police formed checkpoints to keep people away from the Gregg property, and an Air Force decontamination team arrived to search for remnants of the Mark VI. Unlike the accident at Sidi Sliman, this one couldn't have produced a nuclear yield, and yet it gained worldwide attention and inspired a good deal of fear. Are we safe from our own atomic bombs? The New York Times asked. Is Carolina on your mind? Echoed London's Daily Mail. The Soviet Union claimed that a nuclear detonation had been prevented by sheer luck and that South Carolina had been contaminated by radioactive fallout. The Strategic Air Command tried to counter the Soviet propaganda with the truth. There'd never been a risk of nuclear detonation, nor of harmful radioactivity. But SAC also misled reporters. During a segment entitled Dead A-Bomb Hits U.S. Town, Ed Herlihy, the narrator of a popular American newsreel, repeated the official line, telling nervous movie audiences that this was the first accident of its kind in history. In fact, a hydrogen bomb had been mistakenly released over Albuquerque the previous year. Knocked off balance by air turbulence while standing in the bomb bay of a B-36, the plane's navigator had steadied himself by grabbing the nearest handle, the manual bomb release. The weapon broke through the bomb doors and the navigator held onto the handle for dear life. The H-bomb landed in an unpopulated area about one-third of a mile from Sandia. The high explosives detonated, but did not produce a nuclear yield. The weapon lacked a core. The Air Force grounded all its bombers after the accident at Mars Bluff and announced a new policy. The locking pins wouldn't be removed from nuclear weapons during peacetime flights. But the announcement failed to dampen a growing anti-nuclear movement in Great Britain. General Power had inflamed public opinion by telling a British journalist who'd asked whether American aircraft routinely flew with nuclear weapons above England, "Well, we did not build these bombers to carry crushed rose petals." Members of the opposition Labour Party criticized Prime Minister Harold Macmillan for allowing such flights and demanded an end to them. Macmillan was in a difficult position. For security reasons, SAC wouldn't allow him to reveal that the bombs lacked cores. and wouldn't even let him know when American planes were carrying nuclear weapons in British airspace. Within weeks of the accident at Mars Bluff, a newly formed organization, the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, CND, led thousands of people on a protest march from London's Trafalgar Square to the British nuclear weapon factory at Aldermaston. The CND rejected the whole concept of nuclear deterrence and argued that nuclear weapons were morally wrong. In preparation for the four-day march, the artist Gerald Holtham designed a symbol for the anti-nuclear movement. "I drew myself," Holtham recalled, "the representative of an individual in despair, with hands palm outstretched outwards and downwards in the manner of Goya's peasant before the firing squad." He placed a circle around the self-portrait, an elongated stick figure, and created an image later known as the peace sign. The Soviet Union worked hard to focus attention on the dangers of SAC's airborne alert and the possibility of an accidental nuclear war. Imagine that one of the airmen may, even without any evil intent, but through nervous mental derangement or an incorrectly understood order, drop his deadly load on the territory of some country, Khrushchev said during a speech. Then, according to the logic of war, an immediate counterblow will follow. Arkady A. Sobolev, the Soviet representative to the United Nations, made a similar argument before the Security Council, warning that the world has yet to see a foolproof system and that flights of American bombers bring a grave danger of atomic war. The Soviet concerns may have been sincere, but they also promoted the idea that American bombers were the greatest threat to world peace, not the hundreds of Soviet medium-range missiles aimed at the capitals of Western Europe. Bertrand Russell, among others, had changed his view about whom to blame. Having once called for the United States to launch a preventive war on the Soviet Union with atomic bombs, Russell now argued that the American air bases in England should be shut down and that Great Britain should unilaterally get rid of its nuclear weapons. The mental instability of SAC officers became a recurrent theme in Soviet propaganda. According to a Pentagon report obtained by an East German newspaper and discussed at length on Radio Moscow, 67.3% of the flight personnel in the United States Air Force were psychoneurotic. The report was a communist forgery. But its bureaucratic tone, its account of widespread alcoholism, sexual perversion, opium addiction, and marijuana use at SAC seemed convincing to many Europeans worried about American nuclear strategy.